December 6, 2012, Nectar of Devotion, Vrindavan, India, Class 4. Signed in, please make sure you do that on the break or sometime before you go. So, who remembers what's in the preface? Yes? Oh. Right answer to the wrong question. Preface, yes.
Authority, Prabhupada is establishing the authority of the book.
Authority of the book, which is based on? Two things. What are the two things? Yes?
Scriptural references.
Scriptural references and?
And
Rupa Goswami as the Acharya. We were talking about the word Anu yesterday, so I'm sure you've all heard that we call ourselves Rupa Anugas. So this means people who are following Rupa Goswami. So we consider the book authoritative because it's by Rupa Goswami. We heard it from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we are Rupa Anugas. Rupa Anugas means that we would what? Follow Rupa Goswami's what?
Teachings.
And what else?
Example.
Anything else?
Mood.
And what else was in the preface? Yes?
Explanation of the title, Bhakti Rasa Mrita Sindhu.
Yes, Bhakti Rasa Mrita Sindhu. Rasa? What's rasa?
Mellow,
or the taste that you get from everything. And Bhakti Rasa is different from ordinary rasa. How?
Satisfaction,
but not
satiation.
Yes, and material rasa gives you
satiation, but not satisfaction.
So, what do you have to do with material rasa?
Bhogatyaga.
Right, and material rasa, it's temporary. It's what we call chapala sukha. Right, chapala sukha. It's temporary. Whereas bhakti rasa is what's the next word?
Amrita.
Amrita. Amrita. Mrit means
death.
Amrita, it doesn't die.
Yeah.
So material happiness is chapala sukha, chapala bhoga, doesn't last. Anybody have any material happiness that just lasts and lasts and lasts and lasts and lasts and lasts and lasts? No. And bhakti rasa is amrita, and then sindhu, it's a big ocean. It's an expanding ocean. So not only does it keep going, but it keeps getting bigger, unlike the material ocean. So are we interested in that?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, so we're interested in something that'll give us a real taste, that'll give us actually satisfaction without satiation, that is amrita, that is eternal, and that is an expanding ocean that keeps getting better. We want this, or we're not sure, or?
We want this.
Okay. And we can believe it because it's authorized. It's not just somebody saying, buy this pill and get eternal ever-existing happiness. Come to this gym and get eternal ever-existing happiness. Buy this insurance policy. Right? But it's coming from Rupa Goswami and he's citing the scripture. Therefore, we can believe that we'll actually go in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. All right. Now in the introduction, and the introduction... Tell me something about the introduction.
She said, like, he invokes auspiciousness.
Invokes auspiciousness first, yes.
And
the introduction is actually the
start
of the book, which is important. Most books, the introduction is not the start of the book. So you might think, well, I can pick up Nectar Devotion and start at chapter one. No, you can't. You have to start at least at the introduction. Otherwise, you're going to miss the whole foundation of Rupa Goswami's work. So he invokes auspiciousness. Does everybody try to do that when they start something? Yeah. He invokes auspiciousness by saying, this is for Krishna, who's the essence of all rasa, this is for my guru. Prabhupada also offers it. He puts in his own Mangalacharna. And Rupa Goswami offers it to the devotees who are like?
Sharks.
Right. We don't get evaporated. We're not interested in the rivers of liberation and sense gratification, and we don't get evaporated. We get to just swim in this bhakti ras amrita sindhu. We get to swim in this ocean. We don't get caught in the fishermen's nets. We don't get evaporated. We're not interested in the rivers. We stay in the ocean. And that's the idea of the devotees. By the way, I should just mention that you have a book of analogies. Yes? I'm not so much going to be emphasizing them in the classes, but quite a few of them will be on your exam. So do make sure that you study the analogies. We may do a little practice exercise with that. But just, there is a section on the exam specifically about the analogies. All right, now Rupa Goswami starts to explain, what is this bhakti rasa? I mean, first, you know, we're getting a little enticed. Srila Prabhupada's enticing us that it's amrita. It's an expanding ocean. It will actually satisfy you, not chapulisuka, no bhogatiya. What is it? So, can we say the verse together? Anya bilasita sunya jnana karma ganamritam anukulena krishanu shila bhakti rutam. Oh, you even sang it. Wow. Okay, let's see how many of us can do it with our eyes closed.
Anya bilasita sunya jnana karma.
Oh, very good. Can we try that one more time? Try it again with your eyes closed. Only open your eyes if you really need to, and then close them again. Oh, that was lovely. Again, if the only thing you learned from this class is the meaning of that verse, very good. Even if 5 years from now, if I see you somewhere, I'll say, that's the meaning of pure devotional service. Seriously, I'll expect you to know that. Even if you say, I don't remember that and that and that, but I remember the meaning of pure devotional service.
What's the translation?
What is the translation? I'm more interested in the word for word. You can look at the translation of yourself. Okay, what's the most important word there?
Krishna.
Krishna. Who's Krishna? Now he applied it. Oh, that's so good. Who's Krishna? He's everything. Everything belongs to him. He has all energies. But he's also Krishna playing his flute. When we say to Krishna, we don't really mean just to the grass and the trees and the air and the sky and the clouds. Although they're also part of Krishna. We mean to the person, Krishna. But we also mean to Krishna's associates. We're also interested in the battle of Kurukshetra and Krishna's devotees. They're included. And then this is the definition of what?
Pure devotional service.
Sanskrit?
Uttama.
Bhakti what?
Uttama.
Bhakti Uttama, okay, which is at the end. And this is not just about bhaktir, but bhaktir?
Uttama.
Which means literally?
Topmost.
Topmost, or literally?
Prema.
Above ignorance.
Yeah.
Above, no, not prema. It's not prema. Not prema. Not prema. Means above ignorance. Because this bhakti uttama does not just apply to prema. It does not just apply to prema. It also applies to sadhana. It also applies to sadhana. Which is why I'm saying that this verse is the most important of the whole book. Because if you want to get to prema, if you want to get anywhere, you have to be on the right path. If you're on another path, you may be delayed. One time coming to India, I got stuck in a snowstorm in New York. And my plane was stuck on the tarmac, on the runway, for 9 hours in a snowstorm. Which was really not fun at all. and the plane was too hot. They had to open all the emergency doors even because we were so hot in there. And they served all the food. They served all the liquor too. They showed all the movies like 3 times. And all the other flights were canceled, and the pilot said, if we cancel your flight, because it's around Christmas time, you won't get another flight. He said, we're going to try to get them to keep you on the plane. And so 9 hours. Finally, they kept de-icing us, and we would ice again, and they'd de-ice us, and we would ice again. Finally, we took off. And as soon as we took off, they just turned off the lights because they had nothing left to do, you know, so they just hoped we would all just sleep. So they just left the lights off. And by the time we got to London, we'd all missed our flights, of course. And then I had another, I think it was 8 or 9 hours in London. Thank you, Krishna, they had showers in Heathrow. I can take a shower. And then they said, I'm sorry, we have no more flights to Delhi. All the flights, you know, because my original flight was gone. They said, you know, there's no room on any flights. It's Christmas. All the flights are booked. They said, we can put you on a flight to Bangkok, Thailand. Which flew right over Delhi. You know, I'm looking down the window. You know, and then I ended up in Thailand. I mean, I've never been to Thailand. I wished I had a day I could actually, like, walk around. And I had to stay in the airport. And then by the time I actually got to Delhi, it was like 55 hours of travel by the time I got to Vrindavan. You know, and, it was, and then they lost my bag, of course. Hare Krishna. And then because it's India, it's an hour and a half to fill out the forms for your lost luggage. You know, in America it would be 10 minutes, and it was an hour and a half. And then I finally get to Vrindavan at 2 in the morning. And I said, I'm supposed to have a room here. We don't have any record of your having a room. And I said, oh, so-and-so said that I have a room. Should we wake him up? I said, no, it's 2 in the morning. So we waited till like 3:30 to wake him up. And they said, oh, I might as well take a shower and go to Mangalarti. So if you're on the wrong path, you're going to get delayed. You don't want to go to Bangkok. You don't want to get stuck in a snowstorm. You don't want to go to Bangkok and just pass over Goloka Vrindavan, hi Goloka Vrindavan, you know, and then have to take another plane back and lose your luggage. And, you know, I got there eventually, a little tired and dirty and worn out. And but we want to go straight, right? Everybody want to go straight? You don't want to take an unnecessary birth. Anybody want to take an unnecessary birth just because we don't know what we're doing? So we want pure bhakti. We want to be on the path of pure bhakti from the beginning. So now in America they have, I've never taken one, but they have now direct flights. I think from Chicago and from New York you can fly now direct to Delhi. So everybody would like to have a direct flight, right? So we want to be in pure bhakti and take the direct flight. Does this make sense to everybody?
Yes.
So this pure bhakti applies to day one of sadhana. This is the path of pure bhakti. This verse is not describing just the destination. It's describing the path of pure bhakti. Therefore, Prabhupada would sometimes say, all my disciples are pure devotees. What did he mean by that? He meant they're all on the path of pure devotion. Or like if you see a mango tree, the little mango is still, you can still say it's a mango. Oh, there's a mango on the tree. You can't eat it yet, but you can still say it's a mango. So what does it have to be from day one to be bhakti uttama? Okay, well, first of all, it has to be for
Krishna.
Krishna. Now that sounds really simple. It's not. It's not at all. And we were having this whole discussion. Krishna and the devotees, Krishna and the devotees. And I'll tell you, it's subtle, but it's significant. You can have the wrong center and think it's Krishna. You can be serving a devotee separately from Krishna and think, I'm doing this for Krishna. You can be serving the institution separately from Krishna and think it's Krishna. You can be. Just like that famous writer Stephen Covey, I'm sure most of you have heard of him. I've never read his whole book, but my godbrother Sridhar Maharaj urged me to read chapter 2, What's the Center of Your Life? And he talks about being church-centered. You can be church-centered instead of God-centered. Of course, Covey wants you to be principle-centered, but that's not pure bhakti either. And we're just about to get to what does it mean to be principle-centered. You can be liberation-centered, your own personal purification-centered. You can be church-centered. You could be family-centered. And think you're Krishna-centered when you're not. It's very easy. It's very easy to think you have Krishna at the center when you actually have something else at the center. Does this make sense to everybody? Yes?
Again, like yesterday's question, probably I didn't get it clear yet.
You probably won't for a while.
No, it's just to ask again that when we say, what do we mean when we say like we have to serve the devotees?
This is not an easy thing to understand. I can't tell you that I've 100% understood it myself. I can say I am understanding it. At least I can say I am understanding that it is not so simple. That there's a big difference between a Krishna-centered relationship with a devotee and a not Krishna-centered relationship with a devotee. Now, of course, any relationship with a devotee will eventually purify you, but you'll have to make it Krishna-centered first. If you do something that's not pure bhakti, you may eventually come to pure bhakti, but you've got to come to bhakti, pure bhakti first. Like Prabhupada said, if you chant with offenses, the chanting will free you from offenses, but you've got to become free from offenses first. He said, like if you're trying to light a fire with wet wood, first you have to dry the wood, otherwise you're just going to get smoke. So chanting with offenses gives you smoke. Now, if you keep trying to light the fire, eventually, you know, it'll dry out the wood. But if you keep pouring water at the same time, it will take a long time. So as Rupa Goswami explains later, there's many weeds that can look like bhakti and grow up with the bhakti creeper. And you might think that they're bhakti, but they're not. Therefore, the most important thing in this whole book is understanding this verse. It's got to be Krishna and only Krishna. Now, if I only care about pleasing Krishna and I don't care about anything or anyone else, then I will care about everybody that Krishna cares about because I only care about Krishna. I can give you another example, and this will probably offend half of you in this room, but at least it will make it clear. So I read an article in the New York Times a while ago of the problems that are happening because of divorce and remarriage in terms of family. So again, those of you whom I'm offending with this, I apologize. It's just simply a philosophical understanding. So Prabhupada gives the example that when you get married, you automatically get a relationship with your husband's family. Now, of course, you might not like that. You might not like your mother-in-law or your brother-in-law, but as soon as before you're married, this is also talking about initiation. Prabhupada talks this also with the Anu. By the way, there's Anu twice, Anu Kulyena and Anu Shilana. So the following has to be Anu, that's Krishna Anu Shilana. And the favorable has to be Anu, both have to be Anu, both have to be following. So Prabhupada also explains this in terms of initiation. Before you get married, you're getting to know your mother, your future mother-in-law, future sister-in-law, but if you call off the wedding, that's usually it, right? Difference between married and unmarried, at least there used to be. But anyway, so you get married, and then you have that relationship. So then I'm sure you know that nowadays many people don't stay married, they get divorced. And after they get divorced, they often do what? Marry again. And when you marry a second time, the rate of divorce goes up. So more likely for second marriages or third marriages to end in divorce. It's just statistics. So people get married once and they have children. Man has children, wife has children, they get divorced. Then they marry again and they both bring in children. Got this? Those children are stepbrothers, stepsisters. And they have a stepmother, stepfather. Clear? Clear? Okay. Then they get divorced. So now you have, this article is talking about, you have an ex-stepbrother. You have an ex-step-grandson. You have an ex-daughter-in-law. What is your relationship? It's very complicated. They were saying sometimes in the second marriage may last for 10 years. Maybe when your parents get married, your stepbrother is only 7. And when your parents get divorced, he's 17. So from the time he's 7 till he's 17, you're sharing the room with your stepsister or your stepbrother. And now they're your ex-stepsister. Do you talk to them? And maybe the parents' divorce was very... What's your relationship with your ex-stepsister? What's your relationship? And then the parents, the grandparents, they got a step-granddaughter and a step-grandson. And maybe they got very attached to them and they gave them presents and they took them to Disneyland or something, you know? And now they have an ex-step-granddaughter. And their ex-step-granddaughter is getting married. Do they go to the wedding? Point. When the center is messed up, all relationships are messed up. That's the point. When the basic relationship between husband and wife is messed up, all the other relationships become problematic. You can't figure them out anymore. You can't figure out, what kind of relationship do I have with this jiva? What kind of relationship do I have with this jiva? It's a mess. So when our relationship with Krishna is a mess, all of our other relationships are a mess. And when our relationship with Krishna is good, all of our other relationships are good. So I hope I didn't offend too many of you with that example. But I think you can all understand that it makes sense, right? And we all, I'm sure, either ourselves, we're in that situation, or we know other people who are in that situation. So I know people who have ex-stepmothers. And ex-stepbrothers. And what do I do? And what are they still my brother? You know, do I still talk to them? And so forth. Yes.
There's something about making sense. If you were to pick your relationships according to, like, just focus around purely around Krishna only, it's impossible, because otherwise you choose, like, this levels of devotees, and you would choose, you know, the topmost devotee. It doesn't matter who they are.
Although that's not true.
Or to be, you know, your husband, or to be this or that. You wouldn't choose, like, I am friends with someone because I like their qualities, I get along with them. They're things that I choose.
Okay.
So how's that?
Well, working for Krishna's company doesn't mean that you become a robot. Krishna has likes variety. Krishna is a real variety man. Let's say I was God. Pretty funny, huh? And I was going to make snowflakes. I would make them all the same. Who's going to see them anyway? Probably some of you here have never seen snow and you have no idea what I'm talking about. Yes?
We need the projector remote.
You need the what?
Projector remote. Is this here?
Is it this thing here?
Is it?
I don't know. Looks like
it.
Yeah,
looks like it. Thank you. Sorry.
So how many of you have seen snow? Alright, that's decent. So if I were making snow, I'd make each snowflake the same. Who's going to look at them? They only exist for a moment. And he makes every snowflake different. Every single flake of snow is different. Why? It's just matter. It just exists for a moment. You know, every grain of sand is different. Have you ever seen the microscopic pictures of grains of sand? Each grain is beautiful. Incredible work of art. So you're allowed to be an individual. You're allowed to have what does individual mean? What does it mean to be an individual? It means you have your likes and dislikes. That's what it means. If you don't have any likes and dislikes, you're not an individual. I like the same thing as everybody. You know. this is what Krishna likes, one thing, and we all like that one thing. No, it's not like that. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is feeding the devotees, he gives each one of them their favorite preparations. That means they have favorite preparations. They have favorite colors. If you don't have personal tastes, you're not an individual. Krishna likes individuality. He likes it more than we can imagine. I mean, who would care about every grain of sand? Really, seriously. Seriously, do you care that every grain of sand is different and every snowflake is different? But Krishna cares. It matters to him. That tells me that he likes variety to an infinite extreme. So Krishna-centered includes being yourself. Must. Because that's what Krishna wants you to be yourself. That's what he likes. That's why you are yourself. Because he likes variety. So to have everything centered around Krishna, part of that means finding yourself. And part of that means you're going to have your group of friends in devotional service. That's going to happen even in our perfected state in the spiritual world. You're going to be with your group of cows if you're a cow, or your group of cowherd boys if you're a cowherd boy, or your group of gopis if you're a gopi. They have different groups, you know. And some of them don't like belonging to any group. Some of them are just loners. They don't have a group, seriously. If you're not a group person, you know. Whenever I do group work, not whenever, but often, I'll say, if you really don't want to be in a group, you can do this by yourself. Now, of course, our material personality is not our eternal personality. Thank God. but still, that's also part of Krishna's creation. Those of you who had lots of time to study for this class and read the quote book, which I said you didn't need to read, but if you had time and you did read that, and Prabhupada was writing how that the material world is also not false, it's also Krishna's creation. And if someone shows you their garden and says, come see my garden, and you say, oh, it's all false, that they'll be depressed. He said, don't depress Krishna. So the personality we have in this life, although I'm sure some parts of it we really like and some parts of it we really would like to change, although please don't put your attention there or you'll just get another body. But whatever personality we have in this life, that's also Krishna's creation. It may be temporary. It is temporary. It's not our real identity. But it's what I have now. And don't depress Krishna by telling him you don't like it. You know, take what it is and use it in his service. And using it as a service means there's going to be certain people you like to associate with more than others. And certain services you like to do more than others. That's over and over again in the Nectar Devotion. Do the services according to your taste. So just because someone is a company supplier doesn't mean you necessarily are the one who has to deal with them. You know, you can also go to your bosses and say, I really have a hard time with this particular customer. I really don't think I'm the right one to work with them. That can be your personal taste. It can be just honest humility. I don't just work with them. You know, in the early days of ISKCON, we thought if the guy's a devotee and the girl's a devotee, you can just marry them and they'll be happy. And that doesn't work, as we found out. You know, it doesn't work. We have personalities. There is such a thing as compatibility. Even if you're a devotee. Certain devotees, I may respect them, I may admire them, I may be happy for them, but I sure wouldn't want to share a room with them. Or work on a project with them, or work on a project under them. And that's normal. That's normal. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who look at me and say, well, I wouldn't want to be in the same room with you. That's normal. That's how Krishna designed everything. Don't depress Krishna by telling him that you want to be like everybody else. So Krishna-centered means that I choose my relationships based on the work I have to do for Krishna's company and who I am. How I can best work in Krishna's company has something to do with who I am, what my strengths are, what my weaknesses are, what my tastes are, what I like, what I'm good at. And then it means dealing with everybody, whether they work in my department or they don't work in my department, whether I want to share a room with them or not, whether I want to share my whole life with them or not, I treat everybody with respect. Everybody. Even the ants, the flowers, the dogs. Everybody. What to speak of the Vaishnavas? What to speak of the Christian Vaishnavas and the Muslim Vaishnavas and the other Sampradaya Vaishnavas and the other Gaudiya group Vaishnavas and whatever. I treat because everybody is somehow connected with Krishna's company. So I treat everybody with respect. Not because I want to get something from that jiva. That's the difference. I don't want to get something from that jiva. Only for Krishna means whatever I get is only from Krishna. Janaka Janani Daita Tanai Prabhu Guru Patituhu Sarvamoy. Krishna is my everything. All of my needs are met only by Krishna. Only Krishna pays my salary. Only Krishna meets my needs. I don't marry a man so he'll meet my needs, although that's probably why you marry a man, but he's not going to meet your needs. Your children will not meet your needs. Your husband will not meet your needs. And if you think they will, you can talk to me about it after you try it for a while. You know, your friends will not meet your needs. Your mommy and daddy will not meet your needs. Your body will not meet your needs. If you think it will, try getting older. Your government will not meet your needs. Your intelligence will not meet your needs. Your talents, your knowledge will not meet your needs. The only source for meeting your needs is Krishna. Krishna, and that's the subtle difference, that I don't deal with anyone or anything thinking this person, this situation will meet my needs. I don't go to get anything from them. I'm getting everything from Krishna. Yes?
That's a very good point. But then when you're liberated, then you don't get anything from Krishna anymore either.
No, when you're liberated, you're getting everything from Krishna.
I don't really need anything.
You don't need because you're getting everything from Krishna. That's why you're happy as a soul. Now, you don't think about it anymore. You don't think about it anymore. Just like the dependent child or the traditional wife, if there are any more of them. You don't think about it. You don't think, will my husband take care of me? He just takes care of you. You never think about it. You don't think, will my husband take care of me? The little child doesn't think. Like I'm traveling with my grandson. And he just takes for granted that I'm going to take care of him. Which, of course, that can be annoying. But he just assumes that I'll take care of him. If I buy him something, he doesn't even think to thank me. Because, of course, it's my grandmother. She's going to buy me something. I mean, his watch broke. And I had to go to Navadvipa because my tooth broke. And when I was there, I found him a watch. There were some watches at the airport for like 3,000 rupees. So I found him a nice watch in Navadvipa for 500 rupees. So I came back, I said, I got your watch. Oh, that's cool. What kind of watch is it? I said, it's a thank you, grandma watch. So, you know, that's the mood of the devotee is not selfish like that, but the mood of the devotee is they forget about their needs. Look, I'm sure you've had a situation, maybe even in the Hare Krishna movement, hopefully, that would be nice, when you were involved with some service or some project where you were really taken care of. Has that ever happened? I hope it's happened at least once. No, I'm sorry, maybe sometime it will. It's happened to me a few times. It happened to me one time particularly in Denmark when I was asked to work on ISKCON Interactive. And everything was just provided. I didn't have to ask for anything. You know, they paid my ticket. They gave me a nice room. Somebody else cleaned my room. They gave me really just satisfying prasadam. They gave me all the equipment that I needed. Just anything I needed, they gave me without my asking. Before I could ask. It was already there. I didn't have to say, how will I get this? How will I get that? Somebody just took care of me. I was there for 3 weeks, and I was trying to do about 3 months' worth of work. So they just did everything for me, and they said, here, you can do the service. And it was service that was exactly according to my nature. It was just like a perfect, absolute perfect fit. exactly fits my psychophysical nature, what I was doing. I loved the service. I could easily work 12, 14 hours a day without feeling tired. I didn't want to stop in the evening and go to bed. You know, I was so enthused. And I never once had to think, will I have clean clothes? Will I have something to eat? Will my room be clean? Will I have electricity? Will I have the proper... And I didn't even have to think about it. The only thing I had to think about was getting my service done. And I was so happy. So liberation means like that. Liberation means I am focused only on my service to Krishna and I have forgotten about myself. Now, I haven't forgotten about myself because myself is dissolved and I don't have a self anymore. I've forgotten about myself because Krishna is providing everything and I'm grateful. I mean, I was feeling constantly grateful. Constantly grateful. So you're feeling constantly grateful, but you can move everything off of yourself. So Prabhupada says the devotee is full. The devotee is not hungry because the devotee is full, satisfied. The reason the devotee has no other desires and the reason that the devotee is centered just on Krishna is because they're full. Yes?
What about the Prabhupadas who were also happy and they didn't do
nothing?
They were happy, as Atmarama.
Yes, they were Atmarama. They were satisfied in themselves. But still, that's not absolutely complete. That we'll be talking about after the break. And maybe tomorrow. I might talk about tomorrow rather, after the break. Okay, so only Krishna, only Krishna, only Krishna, only Krishna is meeting my needs. Only Krishna is meeting my needs. Only Krishna is meeting my needs. Nobody else is meeting my needs. I do not have a relationship with anybody else so they will meet my needs. I don't do anything else so it will meet my needs. I am only trying to get all of my needs met from Krishna. Everything is given to Krishna. And if I don't go on, we'll be very sorry. This is a very difficult, deep, and subtle point. It may take you 10, 15, 20 years to figure this out. It really might. It's deep. It's subtle. It's not easy. But at least theoretically, if you can accept that everything should be for Krishna. I cannot get my needs met separately from any other source. It's just not there. It's like trying to go to a petrol station and buy, a house. It's just not there. Other jivas can give you Krishna, but only Krishna can give you what you need. So another jiva can give you Krishna, but only Krishna can give you what you need. Another jiva cannot directly give you what you need. They just can't ever. Never, ever, ever, ever. Can't happen. Because they're tiny. Yes?
How does that fit with... You're saying that
we can
only get our needs met from Krishna, but then also in Bhagavatam, it defines devotional service should be unmotivated.
That's where we're going.
So, unmotivated.
Do you have needs, my dear?
Yeah, but...
Do you have needs?
So then what does...
Do they have to be met? Needs means they have to be met. Do you need to breathe? Can you say, I don't care about breathing anymore? Can you say that? No. You don't go to Krishna to meet your needs. You go to Krishna to serve him. You can't not meet your needs. You can't. A need cannot be not met. You can't. Do it. Please don't try to be satisfied by extinguishing yourself and extinguishing your needs. I'll try to explain it one more time. Let's say I'm really enthused by the mission of some company, some organization. I really like what they're doing. There's some organization. Isn't it nice teaching ladies? I don't have to cover my head. So I'm really enthused by some mission, some organization, some company. I really like what they're doing. They're doing good for the world, and I want to work for them. I'm not working with them to meet my needs. I'm working with them because I'm inspired. I care. But if they don't meet my needs, I can't work for them. Can I? I can't dedicate myself 100% if I have to go someplace else to get my needs met. Can you? You can't. I can't dedicate myself 100% here if over here my needs aren't getting met. Then I'm going to have to do something else. So I dedicate myself over here because that's where I belong. I don't go anyplace else or anything else. And I trust that Krishna is going to take care of me. And as I advance, I can forget about Krishna taking care of me. In the beginning, I'm not going to forget about Krishna taking care of me, frankly. In the beginning, I'm going to be worried about how Krishna's taking care of me. But that may not be why I'm serving him. My faith isn't strong enough yet. I'm serving Krishna because I want to love him, but I don't have complete faith. Are you going to meet my needs? And then I see he meets all my needs. And after a while, I forget about my needs. I don't forget about my needs because I've become nothing, or I don't have any needs anymore, or I don't exist anymore. I forget about them because they're just taken care of so naturally and so automatically that I don't have to think about them anymore. I just don't have to think about them. When I was doing that service in Denmark, I didn't have to think about my laundry. I didn't have to think about my food. I didn't have to think about at all. Have you ever been in a situation like that, even for a day, ever, where you just didn't have to think about yourself, where someone else was taking care of you, and they were taking care of you so perfectly, you didn't have to think about yourself? So that comes. All right? I have to move on. I really do, because I want us to do an exercise, and I'm not, like, so far behind. I don't want to get behind. So just trust me on this for now, please. Or agree that you might maybe trust me on it at some point. Consider that you might consider that maybe you could trust me. Have it as a theoretical possibility. So only for Krishna, and we were saying that we have two anus here. It has to be following. You can't just make it up. And this Shilanam. This love and devotion for Krishna is manifest in?
Actions.
In what?
Actions.
Actions, thank you. And actions are?
Positive and negative.
Positive and negative, and they involve?
Body, speech, and mind.
Thinking.
Okay, you gotta have all this. You can't just be the body. It can't just be, I'm swinging garlands and I'm thinking about something else. I'm stringing garlands and my emotions are for something else. And it can't be my emotions are for Krishna and I'm doing something else. The whole package. Okay? And what does anupayana mean? My purpose has to be?
To please Krishna.
My goal has to be to please Krishna. That's my goal. My goal is the company president calls me up, says, come in the office, well done, good and faithful servant. That is my goal. Okay? That's my purpose. So I'm doing actions on all levels that are anu, that are in the company book. I'm doing the company supervisors. I know what my company president likes because I'm following my authorities. I'm initiated. I'm actually an employee. I actually have a contract. I'm not just hanging around the company. Okay? And my goal is that the company president says, well done, good and faithful servant. That's my goal. Maybe I messed up the sale, but I tried my best. And it says, well done, good and faithful servant. My goal is not to get everything right materially. That may happen, may not happen. My goal is that Krishna is pleased. Okay, now what is it not? Anya means other. Abhilas means desires. Itta means isness. Sunya means zero, without any other desires. Sometimes people go into company thinking, if I work in this company, someday I'll work up and be the boss. In this company, I'll make a lot of money and then I can retire and have a house and TV. If I work in this company, then I'll get some, you know, I'll make some good friends and I'll get some other big position somewhere else. That you're not coming to work for Krishna with another desire. You're not coming to work for Krishna with another desire. The purpose to work for Krishna is to please Krishna. Of course he has to pay your salary. But that's not why you're working there. And my dear friends, if Krishna's not paying your salary, you've got to get your salary paid somewhere. Please try to understand this. You cannot live without a salary. You cannot live without food, water, air, light, love, peace, happiness, and gate. You can't live without those things. You can't do it. You can try. That's called living. Trying to live without all those things is called
impersonalism.
Thank you. If you say, I'm just not going to care anymore about happiness, peace, excitement, love, value, meaning, relationships, that's called impersonalism. You cannot live without those things. So if you're not getting, that's our salary, if you're not getting those things from Krishna, you're going to have to get them from somebody else, and then you won't be working for Krishna anymore. So yes, Krishna's going to pay your salary, but that's not why you're working there. You're working there to make Krishna happy. You're not working there thinking, I'm going to serve Krishna and he'll give me this. If you're thinking, I'm going to go to Krishna and he's going to give me this, it's not Uttam Bhakti anymore. It's something else. Most people in the world go to their church or their temple or their mosque because they want something. They're not going there to make God happy. They don't really care whether God is happy or not. And almost all, if not all, of our human relationships outside of Krishna consciousness, we don't really care about making the other person happy. We want something. So that's, if you read the nice quotes, the difference between love and lust. Lust is, I'm serving you, but I want something. How do you know it's lust? When you don't get it, you get?
Frustrated.
Frustrated me. My husband hasn't told me I'm beautiful for the last week. I hate him. You know, that means you're working for yourself. Yes?
How can you make someone happy that you don't know? You don't know Krishna. But why? So why do we want to make him happy?
Why do we want to make him happy is another question. But how can we make him happy? That's how. Now, why would we want to make him happy?
Like, are we sure that if we make him happy, we're going to, like,
are we sure?
Or that
we will get to.
Or does that depend on, like, from other devotees?
That we will get to. What is the extent of our faith? If I just serve Krishna, I will get everything. I don't need to have a second job in the evening. So we'll get to that. Okay, so this is what Anya Vilasita Shunya means. Does it mean you don't have any other desires? Why can it not mean that? Why is it impossible?
Because we are not a pure devotee yet.
But we are on the...
We are trying to do devotional service.
Okay.
We are not pure enough yet.
We're on the path of pure devotion. To start the path, if you're starting the path, you must have material desires. Got to. Otherwise, you're not starting. You're finishing. You can't start at the finish. It's not that you start with an impure process. It's not that the process is impure. And then at a certain point, the process changes. That's something else. That's called the yoga ladder. We'll talk about that later. The yoga ladder is I start with an impure process, and gradually then I switch to a pure process. In what part of the Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say, don't do that?
Sixth
chapter.
No.
Bhakti
is the topmost.
But where does he say don't start with another process and then switch to bhakti?
This one, second chapter.
Yes. 12th what?
Devotional service.
12th chapter, what verse?
universe?
Come on, Bhakti Shastris.
We didn't study Bhakti Gita.
I didn't study Bhakti Gita. No. But Krishna says it's very difficult if first you take up impersonalism and you try to become, you realize the self and you become pure, and then you try to switch to bhakti. Yeah, very troublesome. So our process is not that first I do a different process other than bhakti, and then after I'm pure I can do pure bhakti. That is not our process. Again, if you could just get this, oh, your life would be so happy. We want to do pure bhakti from day one. The process is pure. I'm not pure, but the process is pure. The water is pure. I'm dirty. The water is not dirty. Okay? I'm taking my bath in clean water. I'm dirty. Okay, I'm dirty. But the water's clean. So Anya Vilasita Sunya means my purpose in going to Krishna is that I want to please him, at least in theory. As you progress, maybe Krishna will show you, well, really, you're coming to me for this. And you go, oops. And then you say, please get rid of this. But I'm not coming to Krishna and say, Krishna, the reason I'm here is I want a lot of money. Krishna, the reason I'm here is I want good health. Krishna, the reason I'm here is I want to become rich and famous. Krishna, the reason I'm here is I want mystic power. Krishna, the reason I'm here is I'm tired of suffering in the material world. Liberate me. We're saying, Krishna, I'm coming here because I want to love you, go back to home, back to Godhead, and serve you eternally in your abode as you desire and make you happy, and that's why I'm here. Yes?
But isn't it that our initial desire for Krishna is to become happy because
we will get to that tomorrow.
Yeah, okay.
That may be in the heart that we're not aware of. Maybe in the heart that we're not aware of, and that may come out through the years. Some stuff may come out, and you'll see, wow, the real reason I'm here is this. Oh my God, how terrible. And you'll cry, and you'll let it go. But at least not knowingly and not intentionally. Are there people who come to the Hare Krishna movement for material reasons, openly and knowingly? Of course. Let me get a visa to America or whatever. You know, I mean, that's... People come, right? Let me come and get a nice place to stay and some food to eat. That's not Uttam Bhakti. That's something, but it's not Uttam Bhakti. Something, but it's not Uttam Bhakti. Uttam Bhakti, I'm coming. If you know that you're here worshiping Krishna because you're hoping Krishna's going to give you something other than just pure love, you're not in Uttam Bhakti. You're in something else. And then you're going to end up delayed on the runway, and you're going to end up in the Heathrow Airport for 8 hours, and you're going to end up in Thailand, and you're going to lose your baggage. And you may get a different daven eventually. It's going to be a long way around. All right, so this has got to be zero. This has got to be zero. Now, we have a different thing for jnana and karma and adi. Jnana, karma, adi can be anavritam. Ritam means to cover. So jnana, karma, and other things cannot cover your bhakti. They can be there. So other motives can't be there at all. You can't have at all, zero, other reasons. You know, you can't be going to Krishna for selfish motives, but these other things cannot cover your bhakti. So jnana and karma and adi. Let's look first at karma. What does karma-covered bhakti look like? Karma-covered bhakti means, well, we're not very pure yet, So we have to do pious activities in Varnashram mixed with our bhakti, otherwise our bhakti is not going to work. Have you ever heard this? That is karma covered bhakti. It is not pure bhakti. Now you may do pious activities, but you're not thinking, I have to do pious activities in order to achieve bhakti. Of course, pious activities come from Krishna. If you're working for Krishna's company, he wants you to follow moral codes. But your main purpose is pleasing Krishna. Your purpose is not following moral codes. And you never think moral codes is more important than bhakti. You never think bhakti is dependent on following moral codes. You don't think, in order to achieve bhakti, I have to be a perfect wife and mother. In order to achieve bhakti, I have to be a perfect citizen. That is not true. And if you think that, it's karma-covered bhakti. Yes?
But what about if you think that, only so as I can purify myself...
Karma-covered bhakti. That is karma-covered bhakti. If you think you are going to be purified by karma in any way, shape, or form whatsoever, that is karma-covered bhakti.
Varnashram is karma.
If we're going to talk a lot about Varnashram, Rupa Goswami talks a lot about Varnashram. If you think that Varnashram is going to purify you in any way, shape, or form or whatsoever, if you think that part of your purifying process is being a good person and being a pious person and following Varnashram, that is karma covered. Now, I may be a good person and a nice person and follow some things in Varnashram because Krishna asked me to, but what's purifying me is pleasing Krishna, not following Varnashram and not being a good, pious person. Because if the cowherd boys come and say, Krishna's hungry, and your husband says, stay here for the sacrifice, you say, I'm going to go see Krishna, goodbye. You don't say, no, I have to stay with my ritualistic Brahmin husbands because that's what's going to purify me, and I can't see Krishna until I've finished doing my ritualistic duties. That's karma-covered bhakti. It's karma-covered bhakti. It's not uttam bhakti. Is this subtle? Yeah. Okay, jnana-covered bhakti is, I want to finish this up in 1 minute and then give you guys a break and then we'll come back. We'll come back after the break. We really will. It's good that you're so like enthused. Okay, jnana-covered bhakti is what's talked about in 12.5, where one thinks, first I have to realize myself. First I have to become purified of all my material desires by realizing myself, and then I can do bhakti. And Adi Yoga, you know, first I have to do yoga. If I'm not doing my yoga, then my bhakti's not going to work. Thinking I have to add karma, I have to add gyan, I have to add yoga or something else. I have to add psychology. I mean, you can use psychology. Nothing wrong with psychology. There's nothing wrong with being a good person. We should be good people. I'm not saying we should be sinful people. But if you're thinking that's my means of purification, and bhakti needs that, then it's karma or gyan covered bhakti. As soon as you're thinking like that, in order for my bhakti to be effective, I have to philosophically understand and realize that I'm not this body first. No, you don't. No, you don't. In order for my bhakti to be effective, I have to be a perfect dharma patni in the world. No, you don't. In order for my bhakti to be effective, I have to purify each of my chakras, the red one and the orange one and the yellow one. That's yoga-covered bhakti. Now, maybe you want to purify your chakras and you want to be a nice, don't be a bad wife for those things. You know, and you should gather knowledge, but please don't think that that's what's going to purify you. The only thing that's going to purify you is bhakti. The only thing that's going to please Krishna is bhakti. Now, we use knowledge in bhakti, we use activity in bhakti, we may even use yoga in bhakti, but that's not what's purifying us. What's purifying us is bhakti. What's purifying us is bhakti. The process is only bhakti. And if there are times when we choose bhakti. Those things might be part of our bhakti, but they don't cover our bhakti. Other motives have to be zero. Jnana, karma, adi may be there. Maybe a good person in the world. I hope you're a good person in the world. We should try to be good people in the world. We should have knowledge. We may even be doing some other kinds of yoga and other things. But we're not thinking that that's what's going to save us. And that's what's going to take us to our ultimate goal. We don't think that they are necessary parts of bhakti, and we never let our bhakti be covered by them. It's very easy to happen, by the way. Very, 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 very easy. A person's going on in bhakti, they're not getting the results right away, and they think, oh, it's because I haven't done enough karma. Oh, it's because I need to do more yoga. Oh, it's because I need to do yoga. Then psh, you're on another path. All of a sudden, you're going to Bangkok instead of Delhi. Another path, maybe another birth. It'll be a delay. It'll be a delay. And those paths are very dry. Karma-covered bhakti is very dry. Jnana-covered bhakti is very dry. Yoga-covered bhakti is very dry. If your bhakti is dry, that may be the reason. There are other reasons why bhakti can become dry if you're offensive, for example. But if your bhakti is dry, it may be because you ain't doing real bhakti. You may be doing karma-covered bhakti, jnana-covered bhakti, yoga-covered bhakti. Okay. You have 10 instead of 15 minutes, sorry. But at least you got 10. Okay, come back at 11:15. Thank you. At least stand up. And if you haven't signed in, please sign in. Sign in.